Welcome to episode 17 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January 22nd, 2012, the day that my 49er dreams died. I'm Matthew Furlough, and this is my bro host, James Furlough.
So, my intro was going to be about the 49ers, and you totally just stole it from me. So, thanks.
Sorry about that. Yeah, that was a heartbreaker. We are coming to you live. This is not the future. We were talking after the game right now, so total bummer. But, you know, whatever. That's not what we're here to talk about.
But it will be in our hearts the entire time.
If we start crying, don't worry about it. That's what it's about.
If it lacks its regular energy and vigor, it is the Giants' fault.
Blame them. Well, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. James is going to have a short disclosure for us.
HP, not my opinion. No, wait. Not their opinion. I tried to go short. Okay, so I work for HP, but I do not represent HP, therefore I should always say I when talking about my opinion, and if I ever say we, I meant to say I.
Cool. I will try to correct you if you do it wrong. So if you want to follow us, feel free to do that. We have all sorts of places you can follow us. The best place, we think, is Twitter right now. And you can follow me at Matthew D. Furlough.
Oh, I am at James Furlough.
And you can go to at Furlough Bros for the show. So, you know, thank you, James, for paying attention. And but you can also go to Facebook and go to furloughbros.com or Google Plus. Go to furloughbros.com, or believe it or not, you can go to just furloughbros.com, and it'll take you right to our main website with all sorts of cool content and this week's articles. Everything we talk about is there, and get your iTunes. You can listen live. It's awesome.
I spend a significant amount of time stewing over what picture to put with each post. So visit and go, well done, sir.
Or comment that it wasn't a good job. I mean, we want all sorts of comments, and I especially don't care if it's negative. If it's negative, keep it to yourself. We go away.
Yeah, I will delete your comment, so there's no need for that. Consider that spam.
It's awesome. Cool. Wow. So
we got so this week was a huge week for news, and there's a couple really big topics that we're going to get to, a la SOPA and iBooks. But the week actually started before that, and so we just like to talk about some of those. And the first one was on Monday, and it's Hulu. Believe it or not, that service who I depend on for all of my television shows, except for the ones that they keep cutting. Like Chuck, bring it back. but that's okay. There are other ways of getting it, like waiting forever, and then it'll come on the Netflix. But anyways, so this is interesting. Hulu and also Netflix are extending into original shows themselves, which I find this is very interesting. So they have one that's coming out. It's called Battleground. I probably won't watch it after reading the description.
What is it?
What is it? I don't even remember it anymore because I was like, whatever. Let's see here. It is Doesn't even say in this article. So don't click on my article to try to find out. It has to do with battles on the ground. And that's the show. I'm sure you'll look it up real quick while I'm talking about it. But here's what's interesting about it, okay? I mean, that's because that's not the important part. The important part is Hulu and Netflix are getting into original content programming. This is kind of significant for a couple of reasons. You know, number one, they're cutting out Hollywood and their whole distribution system. They're not going to be aired on television. They're not going to be found in movie theaters. They're just going to be straight to them. I mean, this is like HBO kind of thing, right?
Right.
And, you know, and their whole thing is because they're spending, like, let's see, Netflix spends $2 billion a year for their stuff. And they're going to spend $500 million on shows this year for Hulu. And obviously, I mean, it has to be good, right? And I think it's all about storyline, not necessarily about, you know, graphics and, well, acting is kind of important. But storyline is, like, it, right? If they can do a compelling and interesting storyline and pull people in because, oh my gosh, it's the next 24, Prison Break, or Friends,
right.
Seinfeld, you know, they're going to pull people and they're going to prove the business model that way. And I think you're going to start to see, you know, some of those bigger players, NBC, Fox, maybe not ABC since they're all owned by Disney, but, you know, you're going to start to see some of them really have to start thinking about what it is that they're doing and what's working. And I also think, like, the internet is made for, like, series, short series, somewhere between, you know, 5 and 12 TV shows where think of it like an extended movie. Think like the Avatar cartoon, right? Where I think that was three right. seasons, but really it was one really long story. That right. didn't work in a movie because they tried it and it didn't work. But it also, like, once the story was done, you know, we can stop. You don't have to keep going. You don't have to try to fit in 10 seasons. We had an idea, a concept, and go on. I actually think about, like, Prison Break was a show where the entire idea was they break out of prison.
right.
Which they did. Okay, spoiler alert.
spoiler alert. A 5-year-old show.
they do eventually break out of prison in the first season. Yeah. And then, like, I got like 5 shows into the second season and went, you know what? This story's done. They told what they wanted to tell, and now they're just filling time because it was successful and they're trying to make it work from a business standpoint.
Right.
And so all that to say, I think these webs, the internets, I think it works. I genuinely think it works differently where you can create these short series and then you put that online and people watch those series and then it's done and you move on to the next one. You know, it's like an extended form of YouTube. Really.
You know. I was going to say, I think, so my thought is, I keep harkening back to, I'm going to compare this really strongly to video game platforms, where, you know, you've got, like, you had the GameCube and the PlayStation 2, and they were going in, PlayStation 2 was kicking the GameCube's butt. Microsoft decided they wanted to get into the game, and they did two things. They had the financial backing to pump out a ton of systems, but they also did something else. They bought Bungie, and by buying Bungie, what they bought was content. They got Halo, which, as we all know, is how do you describe it? It's a system
mega
seller.
Blockbuster hit. Oh, it's a console seller.
Yeah, people buy the console to play that specific title.
Yeah.
And what they really need is they need a console seller of a hit
yeah.
TV series. The thing I keep thinking is that the reason why Bungie, for those of you who don't know, Bungie was developing their game for the Mac when you know, Steve Jobs was showing their
really?
Content on at one of his big keynotes. Like, it was going to be, obviously they were doing code development with the PC, because at the time PC was the biggest platform, but the Mac was really their go-to. This is where we're going to show off what we can do. And Microsoft saw it and went, we want that. And they just bought them. And the reason that Microsoft was able to do that was because they had a huge financial backing that allowed them to throw that kind of weight around. So my concern here is that if anybody does strike gold, and with Hulu, one of two things is going to happen. Either a big company is going to come in and just buy it and turn it into a syndicated TV show, which, you know, if all it is a incubator for good shows, that's not the worst thing that could happen. But it would be nice to see them actually be able to compete as a platform with your more traditional cable providers. I think they want.
So aren't they like the owners of those people making the shows, or they're just paying to have those shows made?
What do you mean?
I don't know. So I mean, it sounded to me like this was like in-house type of stuff. Like they have a team that does it, I not understand it?
No, I think you're right, but I still think that if you've got a team together, you could have, you know, I don't know, some, you know, Fox could come in, Disney could come in and say, we'll offer you $1 billion for this TV series because we think we'll make that much money, and they'll just sell it. Or what will happen is you'll get a team, and this is, I think, the more likely scenario, is you'll get a team, they'll develop a blockbuster gold mine, and they won't be very profitable. They won't make a lot of profit on it, and Disney will come in and say, we'll buy it from you, and Hulu will say, no, we're sticking with it. And what you're going to watch is you're going to watch creative people. Creative people are going to, you know, sit on the sidelines and say, is this a viable place to do business? And I think if they don't have some real blockbusters and they're not able to make some money, I could see the major cable companies just throw their money around. So what this is all leading up to, I think this is good groundwork, but you need a major financial backer who's not going to be, you know, not going to be thrown off by Disney.
Hulu is partly owned by Disney, ABC, Comcast, or Comcast NBC, I guess, and then Providence Equity Partners and Fox.
Which is how they're able to get that content.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, the chances of, you know, they should have some staying power. But I just think it's cool. I think that this is the start of the next generation of television.
Yeah.
Really. And, you know, hopefully it's good. I mean, that's obviously, you know, important.
Yeah.
But that's the other cool part about the internet. You know, for whatever reason, you don't have to hit a mass mass audience. You know, you can really do those niche things, and
you actually don't have to be viral to be successful, ironically, on the internet. You know, sometimes being viral isn't necessarily good at all. Sometimes just having a loyal niche who's willing to spend money is way more important than hits. As far as financial and success goes and staying power. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to watch this develop because it is, yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the first major endeavors into, you know.
Yeah, we'll see if it's available on Hulu Plus or just the standard Hulu website, because I don't have Hulu Plus, but if it's just on the standard, I might watch it just to, you know, support it because I like the idea.
Yeah, I agree.
I should probably do the same thing for the Netflix one so they can go, yeah, see, people love it. Take that.
at least just one guy does.
yeah. Well, you know, let's see. When they were thinking about taking Chuck off the air, I went and ate at wherever it was, not Togo's, Subway, because they were sponsors, and I let them know. I let a little comment note. Because I love Chuck, and enough other people did it. Chuck stayed around, and then went off of Hulu. Anyways. It's a night of disappointments. opening up wounds. So that was Hulu. And, you know, and also kind of Netflix. Pretty cool.
Cool.
I'm actually, like I said, I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this, but I read an article about kites producing energy like 6 years ago.
Nice.
And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And
I vaguely remember this.
I would one day love to have a huge kite like 2,000 feet up in the air just powering my house. I was like, that would be so cool. So when I read that article, or I read an article today called Kite-Like Turbines Harnessed Wind Power at Altitude, I went, well, this link's for me. Sign me up. It says that flying a kite to produce power may conjure up images of Ben Franklin or awesomeness. And but they have figured this company, McCanny Power. I'm going with McCanny. McCanny Power released a turbine blade into the air, and it, you know, seeks wind energy basically. And they have a few pictures and even a video of this thing, and the idea of it is totally awesome. So they look like little mini airplanes that are all strapped together in a huge circle, and each of these little like little airplanes, they spin.
Yeah.
And what happens is it's that spinning that it does two things. It produces power when the wind is spinning it, and they also have little tiny motors in there to help keep it in the air so it doesn't fall down. And then the other idea is when it because kites do that, and so it uses a little bit of its own self-generated power to keep it up into the air. And then whatever excess it has, it sends it down some huge power line, I guess, that goes to a battery or wherever. And then if the wind ever dies down enough, it's able to kind of remember that and or not remember it, but like, you know, gauge it and then bring itself down to the ground so it doesn't come crashing, if that's the case. And then it'll just be there, and then you have to somehow magically send it back up with like a big balloon or whatever. I don't think it's a balloon. I just made that part up. But what's cool is, you know, when you're like way up there in the air, there's a ton of wind, and it tends to be a lot more consistent than like the wind that's down at the ground. And so, you know, the trick is to get it way up there. And then, and they say when wind speeds drop below 9 miles per hour, that's when they'll shift to hover mode and it'll reel itself back in. So that's kind of all it has to be, is above 9 miles per hour. And I guess these crosswinds hitting the rotors, they can pack more than 10 times the actual wind speed, and the blade can adjust its position to kind of like to meet it. And so, they were saying here that wind speeds can generally be twice as fast at altitude than near ground as well, making them more, even more powerful than ground-based turbines.
Nice.
So it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how many people, how many of our listeners actually get to look at turbines or learn anything about wind power turbines, but more and more there's this movement that wind isn't the answer to renewable power. They're incredibly loud, they're incredibly large, they take a huge amount of resources. When they fall, they're enormous. I mean, you don't realize, but like just where the turbine is the size of like a semi truck without the trailer. They're enormous. Even the small ones are huge. So anything where you can get them, and they kill so many birds, it's not even funny. So if you can get them where they're actually one of the leading causes of bird deaths in America.
In retrospect, I probably shouldn't have laughed, just for the record.
Right. But if you can get them high enough where you don't have to risk wildlife, and
this is saying 1,600 feet up in the air.
Oh yeah, that's pretty good. I don't know what the ceiling for birds are, but I got to imagine it's it's above it.
below a mile in the air. I don't know.
Right.
But whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's less birds up that high.
Right. Therefore it's also a little bit safer for those. For those kites, and they're going to break down less. I could see that being hugely beneficial. You know,
and
as
it
long
says
as
that it could power up to 600 homes, depending on, you know,
just
wind speeds.
One.
well, one of these big circle things.
Right, but just one big circle.
Yeah,
that's huge. That's a lot of power.
Put one in the middle of the community. So right. Doesn't fall. Yeah. In a park. Yeah. Man.
But, you know, but I could see how, you know, I could see how you could, I could see how, especially in the, where like the, you know, where we have most of our wind energy today, these, you know, big open fields in the middle of the U.S., I could see how you could create a large farm of these where they are in huge open territories and then drive power all over the place, you know, and it, and if all it does is support our, power network right now, that's, you know, that's a huge, huge benefit. So, oh, that's very cool. I like that.
Yeah. I want one.
So this is something that I referenced it last week.
Teased it, I think.
I teased it last week, but because of the Consumer Electronics Show, I didn't get around to talking about it, but I read a book.
Whoa.
And I'm pretty proud of myself. Yeah. So for those of you who like books, this is a good one. Books is called Worm, The First Digital War. It's by Mark Bowden. You will have the link to the Amazon site if you want to check that out. It's a good book. Basically what it does is it it chronicles the Conficker worm. And do you, James, have any knowledge of what the Conficker worm is?
Of course, yeah. It's the first computer that was infected in November.
That's close, but not really. So this came around a couple years ago. So
I'm trying to read the summary fast, and it wasn't working for me.
So I'm going to help everybody out here, because one of the things that, well, the reason why I wanted to talk about the book, because I this isn't the only book I read. I read a lot of books that I don't talk about on this show, but this
I just try not to read in general, so it solves that problem.
Exactly. So one of the things that this book talks about, there's a general theme and then the specific storyline. The specific storyline is basically the history of Conficker and the people who fought it. And the more general theme of it is network security and the internet. So, this book introduced me to a couple crazy things. Number one, Conficker is a worm. So, most people will be familiar with the term worm, Trojan. You know, I got a virus on my computer. You know, my computer's slow. I must have a virus. So, a virus is a specific type of malware. These all fit under the term of malware. It's a software that's bad for your computer. A Trojan is something where it's malware that's packaged into valid software. So, like, you download an illegal copy of Photoshop, you run it, Photoshop works, but it's got this little piece of software in there that somehow compromises your machine. A virus is something that it's a malicious piece of software that you just download. Well, a worm is a malicious piece of software that is self-propagating. It does not require any. It does not require the user to do anything. It just requires an unprotected machine, and it's kind of terrifying. That's the definition of a worm. And the Conficker worm specifically was a worm that all it really is a portal. It took advantage of a known security breach that Microsoft.
When you say portal, you're talking like online portal.
Sort of. You have to think of it as like a. You have to think about it as like there's a tunnel. They're going to create a tunnel from their computer to your computer, and this little tunnel can also create tunnels in other computers, automatically without anybody's help.
Digging
tunnels. What they're creating is what's called a botnet, and so we're getting.
Robotnet. All right.
Exactly. We're getting a little bit into the woods here, but these are all important terms. So a botnet is.
There will be a test.
Yeah, I know.
But don't worry, we have an iBook for that later.
So essentially, what it is you have your computer, and you do all your stuff. Well, it's possible to get malicious software deep into the operating system that can make your computer do all sorts of things, like send spam or. Attack a certain whatever. Wow. It's basically and these botnets are really valuable. Like a 10,000 machine botnet can send out enough spam to, you know, make you $1 million. And what they find is, yeah, and what they find is that with like spam, it's like 2 to 5% of people will send money.
Wait, how do you? There we go. That was my next question. Like, how do you make money with spam?
Yeah, but that's the crazy part. Is they say like 2 to 5% of people send money to help out the Nigerian prince. Like, it's crazy, but like that's legitimate. There is a certain return, and so what you have to do is if you want to make $100, you have to ask for $10 from 1 million people, you know? And so it's just a numbers game, and so that's why they get these huge botnets where every computer, every node, quote-unquote, but every computer in the botnet will
I'm
send
in the wrong business.
I know. We'll send out 100 emails, and people will just – a certain amount of people will just send money.
And so the idea behind that is then that those computers – they don't get flagged individually. Is that the benefit, or it's hard to track, or
does it... Well, number one, yeah, it puts you can't track the person who's sending the email because they just send out a script for your computer to run, and then your computer will do all the work. Huh. And there's so many of them, and you're not responsible for it. It's not your fault. You're not spamming.
Yeah,
somebody
sure.
else has hacked into your computer. Yeah. Well, the other thing that you can do is what's called a distributed denial of service attack, a DDoS.
DDoS, yeah.
And essentially what it is it's the equivalent is like, it would be like saying, you have a restaurant and people want to attack your restaurant. So usually you have a certain number of customers that you can handle that can go in and out the door, that can be sitting
bandwidth.
There, can be taking, yeah, that's your bandwidth. Well, essentially you overload the bandwidth, and that would be like sending 10,000 people to go fill that restaurant. Now the restaurant can't do any business because it's just full. And those people aren't ordering anything. They're just there. Plugging up the works.
I think I totally unrelated, but well, not unrelated, but I think I remember there was a story where this one group did a DDoS attack on Twitter, Facebook, and Google at the same time, like same amounts. Twitter completely crumbled, went down for like a day. Facebook, parts of it went down for like an hour, and Google never even noticed.
Yeah.
Other than they went, oh, there's some weird thing going on with our logs, but.
So what's crazy is, and this book gets into all the technical backgrounds about how they did it, and what's really cool is
Real
that it's like
Turner.
Oh yeah, it's actually very well, it's the guy who wrote Black Hawk Down, so you have to remember it's like written with the intensity of Black Hawk Down, but it's very much geek
speak. And it's about the ongoing war taking place literally beneath our fingertips.
Literally. Thank you. And so book basically, the only reason why there was any resistance to the virus was because there was a bunch of people who volunteered, basically got together without any government oversight, because the government was like months behind on every step of the way, and this was like, you know, super fast paced. But these people just got together and decided to try to
It says within a month, it had infiltrated 1.5 million computers in 195 countries.
You're killing me here. Wait a second. This is important.
Sorry.
That's all right. So the big deal about this is that, like I was saying, a stable botnet of 10,000 computers is a big deal. At the height of this thing, there was an estimated 8 million computers that one person could control. And
was it one person, or was it like a group of 10 guys?
The crazy part is they have no idea. Conflictor still exists. It's still out there. It's still doing its thing. There's been no known attack.
Well, once it kind of gets started, do you have to have an owner, or can it just kind of, you know?
Well, that's the whole idea of having a stable one. But so you have this team of brilliant engineers and computer scientists trying to fight it. So you do have to have somebody trying to keep up with them, because eventually they will block it otherwise and get rid of it. And so there's this sort of arms race that goes on. But they created all sorts of like these peer-to-peer networks, and there's all sorts of nutty things that they did and they're using some of the most advanced computer science out there to make it work. So it's one of those things where it's a brilliant team. They think it's like not Siberia, but I can't remember where they think they're out of. But there's a lot of questions about where they think that the attacks are coming from. But one of the things that they talk about is that all the machines would have to do, and the big concern why people got all up in arms and wanted to do something, wasn't just so that they could pat themselves on the back. It's because they started looking at how big this thing was getting and how quickly it was growing and how stable it was, and they realized that if the bot master decided at some point to send out a command to the entire botnet, all they would have to do is send out, it was something like a 50 kilobyte message from every computer simultaneously, just communicating with anything, going to websites, doing whatever. They could crash all 13 of the root servers that basically control the internet. They could literally temporarily crash the internet.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool and absolutely horrifying when you realize that most of our defense networks and health networks and all of our infrastructure is all controlled by this massive network. And those are really secure as long as you don't take out the big nodes, the big routing stuff like the root servers. So nobody knows who owns it. It might be China that just keeping it around for war. It might be some sort of it might just be a fluke. It might be a couple of grad students seeing if they can do it. It might be crime syndicates that are selling off chunks of the botnet to other people to go, buy it. Because there's technically nothing, in most countries, there's nothing illegal about what they're doing, which is crazy, as long as you don't use it for illegal purposes. And so what they'll do is they'll set it up, then they'll sell it to somebody who will use it for illegal purposes. Nice. And they'll get like four levels of plausible deniability between them and the illegal activity, and all of a sudden they're free and clear in a lot of countries. So pretty nuts. And one of the things that they had to do, one of the ways that they were communicating with the individual computers in the botnet were communicating with the botmaster, was the botmaster would buy a website, and it would be one of a domain name, and it would be one of 250 that every bot randomly generated. The bots would check all 250, and the bot master would only have to own one, and he could send out some encrypted message. And that's how he controlled it. And so the reason I bring this up is because this sort of leads us into later topics of the day. But they were using the infrastructure of the internet to operate this massive thing. They were using the domain name servers. They were using domain names. They were doing all of this. They weren't creating their own systems. They were using the open free architecture of the internet in order to take advantage of individual computers and gullible, the extremely gullible but helpful individuals trying to, save lions in Africa and whatnot. That they said they could, pay me $100 and I'll send you a lion. Okay. So, pretty crazy.
Wow. Well, I will not sleep as well tonight as I did last night. Thanks.
Dude, I started getting closer to the end of the book, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had like 50 pages left. And I was like, man, I gotta finish this. I gotta see how they resolve this, just because it's starting to. I'm actually getting angst about this. And I finished the book, and I was like, what do you mean? It's still a huge stable botnet that can destroy the internet. And I just about freaked out. I didn't go to bed till like 6 in the morning because just scared. Just like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is happening. And they say that, if it's the wrong people using it to go to war, America has already passed laws that have said that we equivocate a virtual attack with an actual military attack if it causes damage or kills people. So if somebody goes through and if people die or, there's damage to infrastructure because somebody uses this botnet and they're just so happen to be located in China, we'll nuke them. Maybe not nuke them, but we will go to war with them.
Wow.
This sort of a thing. And it's enough where...
can get the message out.
Exactly. And so, and the scary part about all of this, I think, is that from a public policy perspective, it's always the potential of threat. We always seem to be one step ahead of the bad guys, or more importantly, the bad guys rely on the infrastructure, and so they don't threaten the infrastructure because they realize that it's as valuable to them as it is to the quote-unquote good guys. I think they're legitimately good guys. I won't say quote-unquote. But it's always the potential of what happens if this gets in the wrong hands. You know, it's kind of like a nuke, except it has none of the... it's like it has none of the impression of a nuke. Whereas, you know, whereas we use the Stuxnet virus to destroy the nuclear cyclotrons in Iran, we used a virus. Well, we developed it. The Israelis delivered it, and that's what the general thought is. And you know, it was a computer virus that attacked the controlling systems for motors. Motors spun up, they turned off all the cooling systems, and they blew up. They blew up this factory. And you sit there and you go, this is real. This isn't some crazy video game. This is, we kill people with this technology. And there's somebody out there controlling the most powerful botnet that we've ever seen. And we don't know who it is. We don't know what they're doing with it. We don't know why they've done it. We just know they've done it. And we try to keep up with them, but it's way easier for them than it is for us. So it's a terrifying scenario, and one that segues nicely into topics of Tuesday.
Okay, there we go. I thought it was the next topic. I was like,
I'm gonna skip that one for a moment. I had a moment of clarity, but I'll get to that later.
Wait until Thursday. All right.
Yep. Yeah. Pretty much. Exactly. Wikipedia, Reddit, Bong Bong.
Boing,
actually,
boing.
Boing Boing, thank you. actually shut down quite a few other companies, but as of Wednesday, they were the only ones that were announced that they were going to do it. But there was a massive internet protest against the Stop Online Piracy Act and the Protect Intellectual Property Act that had been proposed in Congress. Pretty crazy.
I didn't notice at all.
You didn't notice at all?
No.
Really?
No. Well, so here's what's weird, because I was in the office that day.
Oh, okay.
Wikipedia worked for me all day.
Really?
I was able to look up information just fine. I was crazy. I kept getting disappointed because I kept wanting to see the black screen and the message, and I could not get it.
Huh. Well, okay. So
We went home later that night, and I did it on Jesse's computer.
And they were already back up.
No, it was blacked out, but I couldn't get it to work at work.
That's so weird. So one of the things that I found out was that if you actually went to Wikipedia on Wednesday during the blackout, and you clicked on, you know, you typed it in, it would actually bring you to the proper page, and then it would, within like 10 seconds, it would flip to the black page. It would black it out. And what it was actually a little piece of JavaScript that would, that they would have wait a few seconds, so you knew you actually got to the right website, and then it would forward you to the black page. Well, for those of you who know how JavaScript works on your browser, you can stop the execution of JavaScript just by hitting the escape button. So if you were using Wikipedia, you could just hit escape, and while it was in that moment, and you'd be able to surf just fine.
Nice.
I know, which is pretty funny. Everyone, I didn't know about it till after the blackout, but everybody who said they figured it out during the blackout were like, yeah, I've never felt so guilty for looking up stuff on Wikipedia.
Well, their whole thing was to raise awareness, and it worked.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But the only reason I bring that up is because I wonder if it was they specifically did it for companies like HP, like they had worked out a deal somehow, or if your company just... I know. Or if your company just did Like, for some reason, I imagine it was something to do with the fact that whatever JavaScript was happening was being blocked by some sort of a filter on your computer.
Yeah, that's possible. I wish I had been home because I would have signed on and off of the VPN network to see if, you know, if that truly was making a difference. Though it's weird because when I'm on the VPN, it says that I'm in Austin, Texas, and then when I'm off of it, it says I'm in Oregon. But when I'm in the office, it says I'm in Oregon.
That's weird.
So yeah, so I don't know, but yeah, I was really bummed. All the other sites, you know, their things worked properly. Of course, I thought it was funny. This one guy, he did his blog, but then he kept posting stuff, and his RSS feeder kept working just fine. And so I was able to read everything, but if I visited his site, I would get the
black page.
The black page.
That's hilarious.
So clearly it is not as easy as you would like it to be to go semi-dark.
Right. I guess when Reddit, because Reddit actually started they were the first one to announce that they were going to go dark.
Yeah.
So everybody on Reddit was like patting themselves on the back. We're so awesome. But I guess when Reddit took down their servers, it was like a huge ordeal. It wasn't like we're going to add a little splash page to one of our CSS. It wasn't like they just went through and edited one of the master CSS templates.
Yeah.
It's like, they turned their servers off, and I think they were doing maintenance and stuff was what they did during that 12 hours. they were like, yeah, it was actually a huge deal to take it down and turn it back on. Which is why, cause they only went down for 12 hours. And when people realized it was only 12 hours, they started to whine, and Reddit was like, we'd love to do it for more, especially seeing how, you know, bigger companies like Google and Wikipedia are doing the full 24 hours, but it's a little too late. we already got this one in the works. We're doing 12 hours and we're done.
That's funny.
Yeah, so pretty fascinating for any of us that were alive and online that day. Obviously, for people who are trying to figure out what the deal was, these are they're basically bills that are designed to protect intellectual property and prevent porn being sent to inappropriate ages and whatnot. But the problem was is that and this was the tie-in to Worm. What they did is what they use is they use redirect tools for the domain name server. So essentially what happens is they could go in and the domain name servers are what, you know, if when you go to www.google.com, there isn't a server named google.com. It's a set of numbers that is your IP address. And essentially there's these big servers that keep track of the name and the corresponding IP address. And what they would do is they'd essentially say, when you find this name, go to this IP address instead. And so you wouldn't go to Google, you'd go to some government splash page. And so they would just redirect traffic away from a site. And I actually realized after reading Worm that I'm pretty sure that this was one of the unspoken reasons why we did it, was because one of the biggest problems with fighting the Conficker Worm was the DNS servers. They're so big, there's no control, there's no oversight, and if they had actually been able to redirect domain names like this bill wants to allow people to do, they could have redirected all the domain traffic and the Worm would have been dead in its first generation.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure that that was one of the kind of the underlying things. But the big concern is that YouTube has copyrighted materials on it, and if the right palms grease the right palms, Google could be taken down, and they would not be given any due process. So Sort of.
Well, and that was the other part of it, right? It was the no due process was part of the issue.
Right. That's, well, I personally think that's the crux of the issue. I don't actually disapprove of the United States trying to protect intellectual property laws, but I do disagree with them taking down websites without due process. And it could take up to a year, which could destroy a fledgling startup who gets a little bit, gets tangled in with the wrong
Well,
thing.
like we said, YouTube never would have started, which may not be a bad thing, but
Well,
I mean, essentially they were treading on the fact that no one would ever sue them because they never had any money, and then once they got bought by a big enough company, they went, well, now they can protect us, which is
yeah.
exactly what happened. And in this case, you would never have to sue. You'd just say, cut them off, and they'd be done.
Right. And I don't know if you've been following it, but two major file sharing websites have gone down this week. One American, one foreign, and their servers have been taken down because for copyright infringement. And everybody argues, look, you can take down these websites when there's legitimate copyright infringement going on. They're a file
Yeah, that's
sharing
right.
site. Why do we need these hugely dangerous bills, these hugely dangerous powers to be instilled in people that are in unelected officials, moreover, why are we going to trust them with this when you already have the tools necessary to protect intellectual property in America?
Right.
But
So
obviously, yeah, sorry.
Now semi-related to it, but a kind of a change. One of the cool things about it was the power to see how the internet could influence politics,
Yeah.
by doing it. And I read an article called "Beyond SOPA: Let's Iterate Politics," and I thought it was cool. It's on my new favorite website, Pando Daily. It's literally a new website, so it's not like I recently discovered it. Which actually,
Nice.
it's formed by Sarah Lacey, I believe is her name, and she was actually one of my like top four favorite writers of TechCrunch, and then she left when they had their whole kerfuffle, and so she started her own TechCrunch competitor basically, and it's awesome. Poor TechCrunch. And by the way, she brought on all of those authors who I loved and quit, and now they all write for her on occasion.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to check this out.
Including the founder of TechCrunch, who got ousted of his own company. Now he writes for her, and his own blog. But anyways, that's not the point here. They wrote this thing, and I thought it was so cool because it was saying, like, one of the cool things about the internet is it has the ability to disrupt things and disintermediate the middlemen. And they were like, we've already proven that we can affect politics and we can rouse people to make decisions. And I think people are starting to realize that, there's an opportunity here to disrupt politics as well. One of the reasons why you used to have a representation system, a Congress, was because it was really hard to get everybody to vote on things. I mean, it was just physically difficult to do. And so you would elect representatives to go to you and do the debates and learn about the issues and then vote for you. And their whole thing is like, getting people to vote's pretty darn easy now. Obviously, though, there's security issues and other, cheating issues that you have to deal with, but it's like, it's not unfeasible, feasible to say, hey, we have a big issue. How about Congress doesn't vote on it? How about the people vote on it? And then we just, we'll tally them up with our magic servers over here and go, here's the answer. And they were like, why do elected officials anymore? Maybe they're the ones who propose the bills and manage the process, but they're not the ones who make the call anymore. And they're like, and this could solve some of the big lobbyist problems that we have, where they're spending gobs of money, and there's I don't feel uncomfortable saying that Congress is not the most scrupulous group of people in the world. I don't care what side you're on. I think everyone will agree with that statement. But I obviously, and it would create a whole new set of problems, right? Because you could have clearly activists voting on certain issues and people not voting on other issues, and you could there's certain issues that would arise from it. But the point of it was to say, there's an opportunity here to disrupt politics the same way that TV is being disrupted, that music disrupted, that Hollywood is being, you know, disrupted on. And, you know, and so, you know, so some people are saying, hey, let's focus on Hollywood, which I think you found an article about that. But this one was saying, let's focus on the politics here. You know, let's fund companies that figure out ways, as crazy as it sounds, to literally disrupt our political system.
I have a few thoughts on this, and I'm going to try to skirt my own political opinions as much as possible. I think that one of the things that happens, that is happening, is that one way or another, disruption is happening. And I think, you know, we've long thought that, the internet should be the, you know, the land of, there's a certain group of internet users that think it should be the wild, wild west. And there's a certain group of people that think it should be well regulated, like any other industry. Right now it is the wild, wild west, and it's sort of this worldwide thing, and there's no, even the most powerful of the centralized organizations that support the internet, nobody controls it. So there's a lot of questions about how America should treat the internet, and I think that that's especially in regards to politics. But I think that what I'm trying to get to is that originally the Constitution was written for a time and place when the internet didn't exist, and it didn't. I feel like we are reaching the outer edges of the paradigm that our legal system was created for.
Yeah.
To deal with things. We can communicate so effectively. We can communicate so quickly. It's such a powerful tool. It's not really controlled by anybody. There's all sorts of illegal activities that go on, sometimes with people in foreign countries, sometimes by, you know, Americans doing illegal stuff in other countries. You know, I think what we're seeing is we're very rapidly approaching a point where the government's going to have to make a decision. Do we want to start to derelate to how are we going to address this thing? How are we going to interact with it? And I think it's really easy to say, I don't want them to interact with it at all. But at the same time, I think it's, you know, there's clearly a lot of people conspiring, and there's a certain, you know, it's like security stuff. It's like this, the Conficker worm. Should we be able to defend our little chunk of the internet from a foreign invader, or is it a worldwide network that we don't have direct control over any part of? You know, is it our territory or isn't it? Is it something we can regulate or isn't it? If we regulate it, how do we regulate it? And I don't want to jump to, like, we need a constitutional amendment, but I think we need some really, really smart lawyers and really, really smart engineers and politicians and people who can communicate and think clearly about these issues. And because it just obviously does not fit into the classical paradigms. And the other thing that I think is really obvious is that it's opening up, it's like Ron Paul and the Libertarian Party is having Occupy Wall Street movement, huge part of the grassroots part of the Tea Party. These were all only possible because of the internet. You know, open, free communication. We can all go to our blogs and we can say our opinions and everybody can talk. Things are changing, and we got a lot of old people who don't really understand what it is that they're dealing with, and they're very accustomed to going with whoever the highest bidder is, which is kind of terrifying, that this whole thing could be decided on by the highest bidder. Which brings me into a next article. So a lot of you remember a couple weeks ago we had a cool interview. One of the things that kind of came up a lot was the company Y Combinator. They're an incubator of startups, and they have a blog. And basically what they said was and their focus is changing. They say that what SOPA is and what PIPA are, what they represent, and now there's two more bills that do similar things that are kind of trying to slide in there and get that in there. But what these really are, they are the death throes of major, massive piles of money. Their industry is being disrupted in a very real way, but unlike many industries before them, they have the finances to and the know-how to get in with regulators. And so they're doing everything they can to actually slow down the disruption, to slow down things that are going to change. And the problem is that they're opening up all sorts of problems for civil liberties, because a lot of these powers are don't require elected officials to be there's you know there's no elected officials, so there's very few oversight that can be had to or you know or the ability to hold people responsible. There's no balance of power, and there's no due process, so it's like it just kind of happens, and you don't really get a voice about it. So basically, Y Combinator said the reason why this is happening is because TV and movie industries are collapsing, and all they have is a treasure chest, essentially. And this is the time. And so Y Combinator, I think, in this sense, this is sort of one of my guilty pleasures, is watching companies die. They've got their sharks, and they can smell the blood in the water. They realize that big media is scared, and that's why this is happening. Because they've been looking at their finances for the last 2 decades, and they realize that their time is coming to an end, for a whole slew of reasons. But it's really poorly timed, considering what's going on technologically, and the fact that we don't need them anymore for entertainment. Hulu's a perfect example. Netflix, people who are doing entertainment on YouTube, us. You know, we don't. You don't need a radio anymore. You don't need big media, because if you want your news, you can just listen to the Furlough Bros, and
Right.
things like that. So you know, so Y Combinator's going, this is the time we
Well,
got to
and I
get.
think it's cool too. They said, you know, it may not just be like sit back and watching. There's probably going to be some sort of social component in there. You know, and they're like maybe not like classic video games, but maybe something where yeah, part of the time you're watching, part of the time you're interacting. We don't know. But
Well,
you know, that could be the future and we want to help fund that.
and one of the things, I mean, you think about passive watching for most of human history has not existed. It's always been plays. Your entertainment, your music were plays, and there was interaction from the audience. The audience cheered, the audience booed, the audience laughed. You know, how often have you gone into a play and seen a comedy show where the comedian addresses somebody in the audience? You know, you could see. I mean, and that's old school, but that's something that old media, big media, doesn't know how to deal with, because they don't understand this new technology. And what if we give too much of our freedom away? What happens if we give too much of our money away? And so yeah, there's so many unknowns here coming down the ballpark. Sorry, that was such a mixed metaphor.
No problem.
There's so many stuff coming down the pipe,
There we go.
that you know it's very it's you know you can see it's just freaking them out. They're actually not emotionally prepared for what's happening to them. So I don't know, pretty exciting to see all this, and it was very exciting to see the internet get angry. That's another guilty pleasure of mine, watching the beehive get poked. And you know, because obviously the government didn't think that they were gonna have any hard time. They had bipartisan support because they had got paid appropriately by all the right people. They thought that these bills were just gonna move through no problem, and they poked the beehive, and we got angry and we got riled up, and stuff started to change. And so I think, you know, unlike Occupy Wall Street and the Tea Party, this really had, you know, bipartisan support. Everybody wanted it dead, except for the people paying for it. Obviously, I think if you've been listening to this show by this point, you can tell that I think that there is a major culprit here. So James and I last week actually talked about how we want to handle this. Just so everybody knows, whenever we talk about, you know, just part of the corporate opera, you can't ignore actors like the government. And so we are occasionally going to have to talk about governmental influences, but we want to do our best to, number one, be honest about our biases when they're there, and number two, but be fair, as fair and balanced as we possibly can be. So I think the reason I say that is because, you know, I do actually see the importance of making sure that laws that exist are followed. But, you know, I think there's a right way and a wrong way to do it.
And I, for one, have no desire to be fair and balanced, as Fox would have you know. I totally intend to be biased and flamboyant and, you know, biased the entire way. No, I don't. I try to be reasonable.
Yeah, I guess what it is I want to be reasonable and I want to hear both sides and then form my opinion accordingly. You know, I think laws should be followed. I think we have crazy IP laws that are self-destructive. But, you know, that's besides the point.
you know what also is cool about the internet? You're going to love this transition. Is then Thursday happened and SOPA was no longer the important thing.
Yeah, that is so true.
We're so good at such short attention spans that, you know, all of a sudden Apple's event comes up and we're just like, so what? So yeah, exactly. So
yeah. we do have the attention span of gnats.
Yeah, it's Apple's turn. You know, only Apple, right? Could just totally overshadow this entire national thing and go, here, we're gonna talk about books. And we go, my gosh.
Well, in all fairness, this is the first major Apple release since Steve Jobs died.
Oh, whatever. That doesn't matter. I guarantee you the next one. Because this is the first hardware one.
Ooh. I'm going to say, we're talking about the future of civil liberties in the world and in America, but this is the first product that Steve Jobs has been dead for.
but see, what's going to happen is, like, 2 years from now, they're going to go, this is the first one where he didn't have a hand in it before he died.
I know.
So we're still a big deal. You know,
I actually think that's a far bigger deal than...
Yeah,
than
whatever. This, but... You know, it's Apple. Come on.
Talk about wearing our biases on our sleeves. Just so everyone knows, I'm currently reading the Steve Jobs biography, so... I might be a little bit all wound up about Steve Jobs lately. Not on purpose. It's just it's hard to do. There's a sort of reality distortion field that's crept its way into the book.
Yeah, no, I understand. And I mean, you know, I'm using a Mac with an iPhone, so I'm you know, I'm clearly biased as well. So there you go. You know, openly honest about it. So, in case you were living under a rock, and which means you missed SOPA, it means you also missed Apple's little announcement. So I'll give the quick recap, because I'm going to assume most of you know what it is. And even if you don't, we'll link to the video and just watch the video, and then you'll instantly know what it is. But Matthew, I'm more curious about getting your opinion as a, you know, wannabe author. You like that?
Ouch.
So, you know, I'm a wannabe author.
Thank you for pointing that out in such a demeaning way.
I have a lifetime goal. Okay. Let me give you the recap before I just totally go off here. So, Apple announced iBooks 2. Basically, it's like iPad-centric app that has pretty iBook stuff. So, it's not just text. You can do pictures, and not just pictures, but like slideshows, and you can do videos, and you can embed like widgets, which means they could be interactive on some level. They have intro videos. You can flip it to hot dog style, or what's the vertical style? and then it shoves all that cool interactive stuff off to the side so that the text is just there so that you can read. Their focus is going to be high school textbooks. So there's that. The other piece of it is iBooks Author, which I did not download, and I don't know if I will. We'll see. I don't really have a reason to right now. But that comes back to what I was about to say earlier. Where it is that it's a software for the Mac that you can download that enables you to create an iBook. And from everything I've watched, I mean, it's kind of funny because you watch it, he's like, oh, and I'll just, you know, he starts off and goes, you can import text in from a text document, which you have to write that to start with. They don't come with that part. And they go, and then it just kind of auto formats where you're like, ooh, cool. And then they're like, and then you can throw in this video into the intro or wherever, which by the way, they don't come with canned videos. You have to create your own video as well and edit that down using, you know, iMovie, of course, and then format it correctly, throw it in there, whatever. But then it sits there nicely. And then they said, and you can throw in these widgets, which require you to know JavaScript and HTML in order to make them. But they can do all sorts of cool stuff. And then you just throw it in there. So it is basically a really fancy layout tool. You know, it's a what you see is what you get editor. And so once you lay it out, then you literally can import it or export it, I guess, to your iPad or upload it to the store, and it will just it'll look right, and it'll look like these cool books that they have. That's the gist of it. They also had an iTunes U thing, which I don't think we need to talk about that because that's not. I mean, it's interesting, but not as interesting.
It's cool, but yeah.
So that's the basic product. Like I said, we have the link, or just go to apple.com and it'll be one of the videos down. You can watch the entire thing, or just the quick video where they have teachers telling their sob stories about how hard it is to teach kids, and iPad's going to fix all that. I have a lifetime goal of one day writing a book. I think that would be cool. Mine's probably going to be a how-to because I'm that kind of guy. Yours, you obviously, not obviously, but
So,
you.
okay, wait a second. Before you start talking about my book, I want to be clear here. I am not a wannabe author. You are a wannabe author. I am an amateur author. I've actually written stuff. I just haven't been paid for it
Oh, okay. So, are you planning on putting some of the stuff you've written on the iBooks?
Once it's all edited and everything, I would love to. Yes. Yeah,
Yeah.
so
No, okay.
everybody
So, it's
knows.
not actually done. You're still a wannabe. All right.
Oh no! Whoa! 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 Whoa!
Whoa.
Whoa!
What?
How many pages have you written? How many words have you written?
I have an
Huh?
outline of like four books.
Of like 4 books? Is it like 8 words or 10? Is
It's a
it? I've
one-page outline of four different ideas.
because I've written 100,000 words, James. A
Oh,
hundred
whatever.
thousand.
It's not about the quantity. It's all about the quality.
You know, I would say a distinction, or it is not a difference
You know
without
what?
distinction.
So I wrote a senior thesis.
Oh,
So what does that mean?
how many pages was that?
I don't know, like 30.
Was it single spaced?
I don't
Or double
remember.
spaced? Oh
Probably
shoot.
doubled.
Okay. So we're talking 30 pages, 200 pages, 250 pages or words a page approximately. So we're so you take 30 and
That's a lot
divide
of math.
that by four. You
Well, plus all my other papers. So what? I'm probably my entire scholastic career, I'm up to what, 2,000 words? But like I said, it's about the quantity, not
It is about the
quality.
quantity. That's what you just said.
No, what did I say? It's about the quality, not the quantity.
Anyways, okay, this is all besides the point. So I thought it was a cool tool. I guess so one of my problems was if you were paying close enough attention, you knew that this is what it was on Monday. By Monday, last week I had already thrown out that it was probably going to be some sort of a GarageBand for books. It's what people described it as, and for textbooks. And guess what it ended up being? GarageBand for textbooks.
Or iMovie or whatever, yeah.
Right. It's a product. It's a productivity app. But one of the cool things about it that I think is very interesting. People really freaked out about the terms of service because if you use their stuff, their tool, iBooks, or what's it called? iBooks Create. What was it called?
iBooks Author.
If you use iBooks Author, and you make any money off of your book, you have to sell it in the iBook store, and Apple will get their 30% cut, which some people, you know, immediately balked about.
Does that mean, like, okay, let's say that I write a book, you know, and I do it in a text editor. I could still publish it in, like, an EPUB format or make it into a Kindle book, right? They're not saying they now own my content. They're saying they own that version of the book.
Exactly. And they only own that version of the book if you sell it. If you don't sell it, there's actually no terms, from what I read, that say they own that, which is, I think, an interesting distinction. Because I think,
Okay. Well, let's say, I mean, I don't understand. Like, if I were to make a movie, I could upload it to YouTube, I could upload it to Vimeo or whatever, I could probably upload it to Facebook. And maybe that's when it comes to the whole selling thing, that doesn't matter. But...
Well, the whole idea is that, you know, you're not going to, if you use their tool, you're not, all of them will be formatted differently. It's not like, you know, you'll bring your text in, you'll bring your pictures in, you'll bring your video in. That's not going to be the same as what's on the Kindle.
Right.
I think things will get complicated if, you know, the Kindle catches up, or if/when Android catches up. But, you know, you have to, so this is what I thought about this a lot, and I came up with the proper paradigm. Apple did not create a store. This isn't like an equivalent to Barnes & Nobles or Amazon. They didn't create a authoring tool that helps you create cool books like you would with, like a movie or a soundtrack, where it creates a standard file that can be played on many different platforms. Apple became a publisher. They don't sell their books through anything other than their stores. You can specially format books to fit their bookstore. And the reason why they work with other publishers is that those guys have all the content. And so essentially what it is those guys are publishers. And so I guess an even better way to say it is Apple is a super publisher. They're above the regular publishers. They don't have any of their own editors.
Or like a meta publisher, or
maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sticking with super publisher at this point.
They almost turned the current publishers into agents.
Yes, exactly. And you know, and with a product that can be moved all over the place. And so you can't think of it as like, you know, they have this. It's like you'd have to think of it as like they have a size of book that nobody else. They have a printer that can print pages that are 100 feet diagonally. If there was a publishing company who could do that, they'd have to give you tools to help you format your books for that. They'd have to be able to build their own stores to sell those books, because it's this format that is so radically different than anything else out there. They're the only ones that can handle it, and they have all the different pieces of it. But ultimately, you're publishing your book through their service.
So I know that Amazon does a similar thing. Like, they've have there now their own publishing arm, where, you know, authors can go straight to them and do that. And they have a similar policy where if they become, quote, your publisher, it's going to be on a Kindle and that's it. Or whatever their book press is.
I don't believe so. I believe that they just do, they just turn things into their standard
file.
That's
kind of weird. But, you would think that, I mean, that would be like a negotiating point, right? Can I control, like, what if I wanted to become an audiobook one day? What do I do about that?
Apple doesn't control the content. They just control that one version of it, though.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. So, like I said, if I had a text file, I could then take that, take it into an iBook, and format it the way I want and go, okay, book made. And then I could turn that into a Kindle book if I wanted, you know, with different pictures or whatever.
From everything I've read, yes, that's true.
Okay. All right, if I wanted to turn it into an audiobook or a movie someday, I could do that too.
Right. I believe so. It's kind of like, you know,
Okay, well,
it's
that's not.
actually
What is
very.
everyone whining about then? What's the big
Well,
deal?
yeah, you have to think about it exactly like it's an app where your app, you have an idea, you have code, you can take that code and put it somewhere else. They don't own the idea.
Yeah, I
You
guess
just
that's
can't run that
true.
app on anything else other than an iPhone. And
Right.
they take their cut if you sell it through their store. From
Which
everything
you
I've
have
read,
to.
right.
Okay. All right, well, that's fine. I don't. What's. Okay.
Yeah, that's I feel the exact same way. As an author, I would do it in a heartbeat. And you know, and it's obviously it's not a tool meant for anybody. It's not like iMovie, which is supposed to be able to make easy home videos. It's a tool like Final Cut Pro, where
Which, for
it's
the record, it would be awesome if I could make a book and send it to someone like our dad who has an iPad. You know, like, for example, I go on vacation and I want to make a scrapbook of our vacation. Basically, it's a photo book that's annotated with movies and videos. And I can describe it and then, you know, send that to him. Because right now, what I'll do is I'll literally make an iMovie thing, and that's how I will do it. It'll flip through it, and then I'll annotate it, and then I'll upload it to YouTube because I'll turn it into a movie and then say, hey, watch this video of our stuff.
Yeah.
But it would be cool to say, hey, I made this, you know, scrapbook thing, but then I don't want to upload it to the store. That's dumb. I just want to, you know, I want to send it to family or friends. Maybe one day they'll add that. You know, they tend to, you know, they'll do the big vision and then listen to customer feedback and then improve, you know, they're like Google, you know, in that respect. But
Yeah.
that would be cool because then you could turn it into it. Then I would actually download the app and that's what I would do. I'd get done with a vacation and that's how I would share pictures. I'd do it via some sort of, you know, scrapbook thing.
Yeah.
Which you gotta admit, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would be very cool. I think that would be
I
quite
wonder if they'll
awesome.
come out with an HTML version of iBooks too. That was the other big complaint that I heard was, well, it's only for the iPad, and I guess here's the way I see it. If they eventually own the market, they will do it. They seem to be that kind of, you know, like with iTunes, like, okay, we'll come out that on Windows.
Right. And well, and eventually they allow it plays MP4s and you can export all of your playlists and everything. I mean, like, yeah, they don't make it easy, but they've given people tools to access their
Well,
software and
they
stuff.
got rid of the DRM on it, you know. But
Right.
it's kind of like once they, it's kind of weird, right? It's like once they win the market, then they're willing to open it up and let other people share into it because they realize that the network effects are huge. But if something like FaceTime, if they don't win the market, they're like, actually, we're just going to keep this for ourselves for
Right,
now.
which I think was a
Which,
mistake. I don't know.
yeah, I agree. I like Google's approach on that kind of stuff. We'll build it and we'll put it on all sorts of platforms, and then people will use it everywhere.
Right, and I think if you know, I there's a part of me that thinks that they're waiting for, you know, they're waiting for it to go. This is totally off topic, but just to sum up my thought, they're waiting for it to be able to work over cellular networks, and once that happens, or at least that's kind of what I'm hoping. That they're
Yeah.
waiting for some threshold point, but yeah, it's that's so disappointing because they said they were going to do it and they didn't.
But
Anyways.
I'm just saying that would be cool, like with so like that iBooks idea. Once again, I could make a scrapbook and then I could just send somebody the link and they've signed in with their Apple account, you know, I don't really care. And then they could view it in the browser or they could look at it on their iPad and it would be this beautiful thing
Right,
that they
which
can
would
literally
be.
flip through. But
Yeah, and I can't see why they would not do something like that, because I could see how, as a company, you'd love to make your manuals,
it's not a
your workplace manuals
technological
and stuff.
issue. It's
Well,
a,
yeah,
yeah, there you go. Great example.
and eventually the, you
You
know,
know, if you're a
with
video game company, download our, well, that makes sense more to have it on a website where you can click on links and
right.
FAQs and stuff like that. But yeah,
But
why not?
yeah, and well, yeah, and why not give it that option? And the other thing that I thought was, you know, or my first thought is, with apps, you can distribute your apps without selling them through iTunes,
Right.
to other, you know, within there's certain bounds to it, but like if you're a company, you can make company-specific apps,
Or
and you
they
don't
like
have
they
to
make your
download.
own app store portal type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're, you know, and I could see them do something like that where, yeah, you make your own portal and you can send out, I don't know. So I don't think it's going to be a
Do you
don't
have
think
to
it's going
be
to be.
a, I know to be an app developer and put it on the store, you have to pay like $100 or $99. Did you see anything about that?
They didn't. I didn't see anything about. I wouldn't surprise me in the least if there was a barrier to entry. No, you know what? I don't think there is, and I think the whole purpose of that, that was the big deal
Wow.
about the tool being free. It's free to people.
Ah.
But this, there is one little exception that people were freaking out about, which is Apple reserves the right to not distribute your book
I did
via
see that.
their service, and everybody freaked out because they're like, "Oh, it's censorship," and
Like, whatever, they do that with all their other stuff too.
I'm gonna say, and one of the biggest problems that Kindle is dealing with right now is spam, especially spam. It
Oh, really?
essentially, yeah, what it is it's you have they have these people that are generating books full of garbage content that they put on the website, and they market them well, and people will, a certain number of people will buy them without knowing, and then they make money, and it's a piece of garbage, and it costs them almost nothing to
What
actually
we
make it.
should do, Matthew, I'm
Yeah.
just throwing this out there. We should create a botnet that scrapes blogs, take each post, turn it into a chapter, and then be like, here's Lifehacker for the year 2011, or for the
Nice.
December 2011. And then you have like 12 books, and each botnet is producing a different book and listing it and selling it on Amazon.
Don't you just hate the fact that like there are people making all sorts of money like using these simple terrible tricks? You start thinking about it, you're like, it's so easy. I hate morals are such a, trap right now.
Wow,
yeah,
man.
something like that would be awesome. But I think
We'd only have to sell them. If we sold them for $10 a pop, and we had what, 2% people respond, the numbers could work out. That's all I'm
know.
saying.
That's all I'm saying. The thing that oh, the other thing that I thought, and because the other issue that iBooks is running into
Oh yeah, that's
is
right.
this big thing of they want to sell books for $10 to $15 a book, textbooks, which traditionally sell for, $50 to $100. And everybody's saying, that's great, those textbooks are really cheap, but you realize that your least expensive iPad costs $500. And everybody's freaking out. So this is going to I'm gonna blow everybody's mind right now. You're listening, you're about to receive gold. Apple
Okay.
will oftentimes announce things that don't make sense in their current form right before a huge announcement that suddenly they make sense for. I will give you an example.
I was gonna say I'm thinking the exact same thing you are, I think.
Probably. I will give you an example.
And it has to do with March. Go ahead.
Yeah, the iPhone, exactly. The and so this all precipitates sort of a deeper conversation.
Which, by the way, is where I come up with my HTML idea, because it solves a lot of these issues.
Interesting. I'm
But
listening.
anyways.
I want to hear it. So what we're doing is we're barreling down the path to this what's what I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Okay,
Event?
so all
Happening?
right, I'm going back to this example.
Yeah, just give it to me. I'm tired of guessing.
I know. Okay, so when they announced iOS 5, they announced that there was going to be this new cool functionality, which was geo reminders. You can put up a geofence. When I leave this location, remind me to call my wife, was the example that they gave.
Okay, we're totally thinking different things. Go ahead.
Give me a second. Go. Give me a second. We might be thinking the same thing.
right.
They announced that long before they announced Siri with the iPhone, and I remember thinking,
Okay.
this is going to be super difficult because you're going to have to create your own geo border. It's going to be difficult. It's cool in concept, but it would just be so hard to set up these geo fences. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to think about that. I would probably never use that, even though it's a cool idea. And what I thought was very interesting is they never actually showed you setting up a geofence in during the demonstration. They just showed the effects of it. And for those of you who are, you know, for those of us who are paying really close attention, Siri, all you have to do is say, Siri, remind me to call my wife when I leave this store. And Siri automatically sets up a geofence using your current location. So basically what they did was they gave you this feature, which was cool. It got you all excited. But when you thought about it, you went, it doesn't make any sense. There's something missing here. It's too difficult to use. Well, you wait a couple months and boom, you get Siri. You get the solution. They really like to announce features that don't make sense and then give you the solution later to set the groundwork so that they don't have to announce everything at the same time.
Interesting.
To kind of get people primed. And so what my thought on all of this
is... You're saying that they're going to solve this pricing issue?
I do think they're going to solve this pricing issue. I think they're going to sell iPads for $250. I'm coming back to it.
Boom.
I'm getting excited. I'm coming back. They're going to make... Their argument is going to be... Their financial proposition is going to be, you spend, when you buy textbooks for a class, you spend about $250 for when you buy all the textbooks for, you know, for a year,
for college, a given class. Not high school, but anyways.
I would argue in high, they do this in, well, they do it for, if you divide it over the time, you know, it's a 5-year period, but they, you get 5 to 6 textbooks during high school. And they all cost $50 to $100. Okay. You're talking about spending $250. And what they're going to say is, at your next revolution, or at your next refresh of textbooks, don't buy books, buy iPads. Don't buy Macs, buy iPads.
Right.
And so they're going to start, and that's how they're going to address the pricing issue. Furthermore,
You said, they're going to drop the price significantly. Yeah. Maybe not for everybody, but for, you know, they're going to say, oh, by the way, schools could buy the iPad too for $200 or $250.
Right. And it's going to be very affordable. The other thing that I think, and this is, this goes back to, it's like, I don't think they realized, I know for a fact that they didn't realize that they had a gaming device in the iPod Touch.
Right.
It was other people that told them that, and I don't think...
Which,
you know,
if we had been up and running at that time, we would have said it first.
Yeah, actually, first.
Yeah.
Like, not even... We got it before the blogs.
That's actually one of the reasons why we started this podcast.
That is my quintessential example. I think that they're wrong about college students. They're focusing on high school students, but I think that this is going to hit college students so hard and so fast. I think it's going to go crazy on college campuses.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I guess that one of the articles I was reading says that, like, a lot of schools actually buy the iPads for them. They just embed it into the overall cost because, like, what's $500 when you're paying $40,000?
Exactly. So. And if all of a sudden all your textbooks are cheap, professors can develop their own textbooks.
That's really cool.
You know, you can get the constant. Once you buy it, you get the updates of it. All sorts of crazy stuff. I just think it's. I think it's one of those things where I don't think. And the other thing is that it's unlike private or unlike public schools. Unlike the public school high school system, where there's a lot of schools that legitimately cannot afford that many new devices. Almost every college can. To some degree.
Well, like I said, they're not even going to. They're just going to charge the student. They'll go, it's a requirement. When I went to grad school, they're like, you have to own a laptop.
Right. And, you know, and it might be the engineering department that does it. But I think it's going to take off like crazy in colleges. And
that'll be
and
cool.
You're going to see a real movement. You're going to see, because traditionally with big trends like this, colleges and universities, they make the first move, and then high schools follow, then middle schools, then it always trickles down. I've read quite a few things that blame grade inflation on universities. It's universities that are responsible for that sort of thing. And so if you want to fix it, you have to fix it at the university level. I think what'll happen is it'll just happen on the college level, and then And then what you'll start to see is obviously richer high schools will be able to do that. They'll want to do that. They'll get involved in that. But Steve Jobs has always been a huge advocate of making, giving power back to teachers, disrupting. He's always wanted to disrupt the textbook model.
Steve Wozniak, he taught school for, you know, how many years after he was already a bazillionaire?
Yeah, exactly. And for those of us who were fortunate enough to go to school with his sons, we all had the latest top-of-the-line Apple stuff because he would just, you know, gift that stuff. So it's like...
Our high school had the latest and greatest Apple computers.
Yeah, because I knew Wozniak's, you know, sons. Yeah, we knew him.
but
we're so cool. Oh, that's basically what we're trying to say.
That's our street cred. Yeah.
So
tell your friends.
Yeah, just let them know we're awesome. Anyways, all of this goes back to they're both huge proponents of education. They think education sets you free, and so I think, you know, obviously there's a price issue. And I think that they're going to fix it. And I think it's going to be – I think as soon as you see what they come up with, which I agree. I don't know if it's going to be low prices for everybody for retail. There might be a special, you know, buy 100, you know, get 100 free deal or whatever they do. You know, they might do something specifically for schools. But I think Apple will do something to help schools out because that's just part of their DNA. You know.
Yeah, and I think we'll learn about it in March when they announce
I completely
iPad
agree.
Trace. And we're on the same page. I love it.
I know.
Brilliant.
And this is interesting. For those of you who this is something to pay attention to. This hit me on Tuesday while I was thinking about all of this because by Tuesday I'd already accepted the fact that this was going to be announced on Thursday. I already accepted what it was going to be. So I was trying to figure out why they were announcing it when they were announcing it. And I started to make the comment that Apple's the kind of company who they think ahead on these sorts of things. They have a pattern. And then all of a sudden it occurred to me, this really kind of strange occurrence that happened late last year. No, it was like late 2010, wasn't it? It was a while ago. Anyways, traditionally, whenever a new version of OS X comes out, they always announce it during WWDC, during the Worldwide Developers Conference. And that's when they give you the technical overview, they give you all the stuff that's coming, and they release usually at least the developer's version, if not the full version. And for Lion, they did something very different. They announced a piece of hardware, the MacBook Airs, and at that time they also announced OS X Lion, the latest version of.
They gave you the
OS
preview,
X.
Right?
They gave you the preview, and it was very out of pace. And I was all geared up trying to figure out what are they telling us. They're getting out of step. They're doing something, and they wouldn't get out of step just for the fun of it. They're doing it because of some. There's either an engineering reason or a business reason or whatever. All of a sudden, it clicked to me what the reason was. They knew Steve Jobs was going to die. They didn't think he would make it to WWDC to do the official announcement, to do the final, you know, to do the get everybody all jazzed up about it. So they did. They basically said, okay, I'm going to do an early one, and we're going to announce it and get everybody all jazzed up about it. But this is my last one, and we're doing it. Which brings me to another point. Lion is sort of, you kind of jump in the shark. You know, you start out with like a puma and like a house cat. You work your way up to like a tiger and a leopard, and then all of a sudden you drop the lion bomb. What king of the jungle? What comes after a lion? There's almost nothing else. It is the crowning achievement of something. Well, it was Steve Jobs' crowning achievement. Everybody jumped to the right conclusion, I thought, which was this is the last of some part of OS X. This is what it was meant to be, and I think it's Steve Jobs' involvement.
You might actually find that the next version doesn't change very much. But it jumps to 11 or whatever.
Right, exactly. That's what I was going to say. They're going to stop changing the names, and it's sort of in honor of this is what Steve Jobs did, which I thought was very, I don't know, I just wanted to share that with all y'all because it clicked, and I thought it was a pretty crazy and kind of exciting moment. So
yeah,
that's all I got.
So we'll finish this on a lighthearted note, because that was pretty deep and emotional.
Yeah, thank you.
There. and then we'll wrap this up. Have you ever heard of Rebrick?
No, is it like a Lego?
It is, actually. Whoa. It's Lego's
it's hilarious.
Social media site.
I did not even read the rest of it.
Dude,
I just guessed. That's hilarious.
Yeah, Lego has launched a new social network, kind of. They give block builders a platform to share their creations, is what it comes down to. So you take a picture, I guess, and give a description.
Yeah.
Think of it as, it's a dedicated dig or Flickr, I guess. But it's it's rebrick.lego.com, and it's currently
nice.
In beta. And I don't know how you sign up. I'm sure there's a way somehow on the site. But you go there, and there's just, like, Lego picture after Lego picture after Lego picture. And
dude,
let's see,
I'm checking this out.
What happens if you click on one of them? So this one, so you bookmark picture. So it shows you a big picture. This one I'm looking at a train set. And it says, work in the main, one of LBB's B4-4 locomotives trundles along the main line with a freight train in the background. Oh, so it does. And a Cantonary Renewal train is working on the overhead wiring. I don't see that. This was meant to be a preview shot of my layout, which I showed at Brickvention 2011.
Brickvention.
That's amazing. Awesome. Let's see if I click on the picture. Oh, it goes to a Flickr post.
Nice.
With it on there, where he actually has a comment, unlike in the Lego one.
That's funny.
But it is a Lego social network.
I'm going to have to check that out because I, as many of you know, am a huge fan of the Lego, and it's an engineering marvel. If you're into...
They have a tag cloud. The biggest word is other.
Obviously. That's not surprising. With Lego, it's like, what, you're supposed to categorize everything? I think not.
Let's see, they have projects... Buildings, movies, comics, event photos, first Lego League. I don't know. Other.
Man, I'm so fascinated by Lego. Their injection molding techniques are off the charts. I mean, I don't know if like any of you use them like enough to realize this, but like with Kinect or not with Kinect, jeez. But with their little little snap things. Where they can spin. Sometimes they'll have like blue ones or beige ones or black ones. And unlike a lot of their bricks, those are actually color coded for different tolerances. And they pick what the tolerance is going to be before they mold them because the color's baked in. It's not like they figure out what they created and then.
I have noticed that some different colors are easier to snap than others.
Yeah, they do that on purpose. It's crazy. It's actually like some of them are designed to be free spinning. Some of them are designed to stick and be. And to be, just adjustable. Some of them are designed to not adjust at all. It's crazy. I mean, the stuff that they do from a manufacturing perspective is unbelievable, unbelievably amazing. Coolest manufacturing company ever, in my humble opinion. I think Apple has some amazing products, and I think they put Apple shame, from a design perspective.
They are pretty cool. Yeah, it says anyone can sign up, and then you can start bookmarking things that you think are cool.
Nice.
Wow, they got a Batman that he looks life-size.
I really want to go to it, but I started opening it up, and it started draining all of my bandwidth, so I'll have to check it out after the show.
All right. It's cool, though.
So, cool. Cool, cool.
Yeah. So, anything else fun going on in your life?
Yes. So I built this awesome little project from someone I saw on Reddit. So I have this Arduino microprocessor.
Yep.
James, verify. I'm holding it in the
You're holding it in your left hand.
in
front
Okay,
of the
cool.
screen, and it's got like a green dot.
Yes, there's another dot that's not on right now. I'm going to have you turn that dot on. Now, I might have to stop for a second because
Okay.
it takes a little bit of bandwidth from my Okay, so James, I'm going to send you a website link from my personal website. I'm not going to announce it over this podcast.
Are you gonna IM it to me?
I
Or
am going to, so I'd appreciate you not.
since you're offline and cannot receive messages right now, but I'm sure you'll figure that out.
Yeah.
No, I'm offline? No, you're offline.
No. I'm offline. I did. I accidentally closed that
Okay, you're
window.
back on.
Oh, thank you. Thank goodness.
So you can
Okay.
close your Google Plus window and we won't lose the video chat? Don't
I can
experiment. Oh, you
I
closed the
can close
chat
my
window.
email, my Gmail, which is where we're chatting. As weird as that is. Yeah, so my computer's all messed up. Okay, so James, check out that website.
Okay, I am clicking on your website.
And
Clicked.
then
I see it
what?
on slash off.
Okay, and now click the on button.
I don't see a word out, but
What?
okay, click on out. Oh, no, wait, on.
On.
Okay, click.
Oh, did you see that right there? Right there? That little LED right there? Now click off.
Yeah, you have to.
It's off. Turn it on.
What? Oh, I see it. Cool.
You can control it over the internet.
That's amazing.
I know, it's very cool. It's pretty nuts, actually. I've got it. I've got there's a program running on this. I have like a I have PHP and HTML on my server that are controlling it, and then there's like a file in the server that is keeping track of what the state is. And then I have this program running on my computer that is communicating through my USB COM port, and checking
Wow.
the internet constantly. So it's sophisticated.
That is.
And all it does is turn on and off a stupid little blinking LED.
Well, proof of concept.
Yeah, but it's actually important because it could be used to control sorts of crazy stuff, but
Like
that's
other
just what it
people's
does.
computers?
No, not at
Oh,
this
okay.
point. But
Just checking. I didn't know if you were starting up your own botnet. Create a worm. So
Yeah.
that's cool. Neat. That's awesome. That was really cool. We should have recorded this one with video.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is everybody can hear that it happened.
Imagine it in your brain.
It's awesome. If you want to know anything about it, actually, yeah, if anybody's interested and needs to see the video, I'd be more than willing to make a video for people. Just hit
I
me up.
like it. Okay.
What about you,
Sweet.
James? What are you doing?
So I was not nearly as, or I didn't do something nearly as awesome. I scanned in documents yesterday. Just preparing for tax season and stuff. I started midway through the year scanning in all of my like business receipts and stuff for our property, and so I had to do all the beginning parts of the year's stuff and. There was a lot of them, and I'm kind of OCD on filling that stuff out, and so I, gotta tag it all properly and make sure everything runs out properly. But I am ready for tax season to get here. We're just waiting for a couple more forms, and then we can proceed, which is cool.
Yeah.
So, always a good feeling to be prepared.
Cool.
And we'll just literally send them a zip file and go, here's everything you need. No mailing required, and it's all organized and. Like I said, it's nice. It's a tax accountant's dream, really. Because I sent
Very
him a
cool.
spreadsheet going, and here's a summary of all of it. Which, by the way, it's linked by dates with the files, so they can easily, like, receipts are all scanned in. Oh, let me click on that. Oh, boom, there it is. Done. Yeah, it's pretty neat. So that's what I did. Like I said, not nearly as cool.
Quite as sophisticated, but important.
That's it. So that's all I, that was really my life. That and trying to avoid the floods in Oregon. But yeah. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow. We'll talk next time.
I always expect you to say next week.